wave of water that came through the village, killing 35 people. Weather manipulation. It's been going on that long. They have strontium, they have barium. It's acidifying water, it's acidifying the land. The ability to generate precipitation, fog, storms on Earth, to modify space weather, and the production of artificial weather, all are part of an integrated set of military technology.
They're spraying chemicals in nanoparticle form. The government is using HARP to be starting a storm. The water shortage is a topic they're complaining about, but they don't even want to stop it. They're creating the drought. Planes now make clouds when they spray out shit. You can see it because it happens every day now, kid. You can read the patents and see what they say about this. They make towns sick. It ain't safe to stay around this.
Every nation in every region now has a decision to make. Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists. 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 Terrorists.
Good afternoon, everybody. Earlier today, I was briefed by my Homeland Security team on the events in Boston.
I was walking down Hazel Street, and the cop pointed at me, and then SWAT in, and then SWAT came and picked me up by a shield, and they threw me in the back of a car, and then dropped me off in the middle of Newton.
A remarkable piece of video, and I should point out that it was provided to ABC News.
Speak the truth about terror. Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th. Malicious lies that attempt to shift the blame away from the terrorists themselves, away from the guilty. To inflame ethnic hatred is to advance the cause of terror. The war against terror must not serve as an excuse to persecute ethnic and religious minorities in any country.
So what did I think? I figured, fuck it, while I'm at it, why not just shoot my buddy? Take his job, give it to a sworn enemy, hike up gas prices, bomb a village, club a baby seal, hit the hash pipe, and join the National Guard. I could be elected president.
The hate of men will pass, and dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish.
You are now listening to The Last American Vagabond with your hosts Ryan Christian and DJ Anon. Join in the conversation by tweeting at Third Eye Radio or at TLA Vagabond or calling in at 916-633-1393. Follow the change, be the change with your hosts Ryan and DJ Anon.
Revolution. The word itself is deeply tied to the very foundation on which this nation was built. It is a safeguard of any citizenry within a true democratic republic, and point of fact, is an American constitutional right. Now let's be clear. The idea of a revolution by force is asinine. Even if such a foolish endeavor was possible, the idea of solving the problems of a violent and war-enveloped country on the cusp of dictatorship with more violence and wartime is not only counterproductive, but by not learning from the mistakes of our predecessors, we are dooming ourselves to repeat them. Following the end of World War II, you will see a consistent pattern followed by the United States government of infiltrating dissenting countries by sending in well-funded, non-governmental organizations, activist groups, agitators, and agent provocateurs with the specific agenda of creating political and social upheaval by creating circumstances of massive civil unrest, all with the sole purpose of systematically destabilizing and bringing down a democratic government and replacing it with a U.S.-backed dictatorship. Iran, Guatemala, Congo, Dominican Republic, South Vietnam, Chile, Libya, Yemen, Syria, Ukraine, each shown in Western media to be an unruly country in chaos. Yet in the majority of cases, that chaos was due in large part to the invasion itself and foreign influential financing. We do not need more violence, be it revolution or a coup d'etat. What this nation needs is a revolution of the mind, to shift the way we see and interact with the world around us. And the first step is to begin severing your connections to a repressive and controlling system, to break away and begin your journey of self-sustainability and self-control. As your one true power in today's America is your consumer power, It's the only asset we possess as average American citizens that the powers that shouldn't be respect. Whether it be beginning with simply shifting to peer-to-peer economies whenever possible, or creating a completely off-the-grid homestead reliant on no one but yourself, the true goal is to create the one thing that all of humanity has a right to, and the very thing being slowly removed from this increasingly oppressive society, and that is personal freedom. Today we are discussing how to break away from the system. Joining us is Eric McCool, the founder of Permagora.com and the author of the new book entitled Portland, a great story about a high school kid dealing with love, the transition of life, and the discovery of different ways of thinking. Thank you for joining us today, Eric. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, good to have you on, man. I really enjoyed our last talk, and I think this will be a really good dive into this topic today. I mean, today's topic is one I find to be extremely important, one that I will continue to reveal itself is not only significant, but necessary. A Gallup poll taken in 2013 across 65 countries with 66,000 respondents found the overwhelming majority of the planet considers the United States of America the greatest threat to world peace. And I found that wildly shocking. That's something that really stood out to me, you know, about the way we perceive ourselves. You know, but as I've noted in the last few shows, our perception of ourselves as a country is wildly skewed, and it's becoming increasingly important for Americans to begin finding ways to be less reliant on the system, or break away entirely. So before we get into solutions today, let's dissect the problem. Let's begin with how the government is actively trying to stop dissenting minds and off-the-grid living. So what's the first thing that comes to your mind when you're thinking about governmental intrusion into people's lives and stopping off-the-grid living?
Obamacare.
I mean, one of many. I mean, the first one that pops to in my mind that I've seen in the news lately we've talked about is like the whole gardens in the front yard.
Yeah.
Growing your own food, your own medicines, things like that. That stands out to me.
Water control.
Yeah, totally. Regulation.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one thing that in itself can be considered slightly unconstitutional when you consider that, you know, the 10th Amendment, essentially, anything that the Constitution does not directly give to the federal government is to the states. But that's not what we're seeing today. Mm-hmm. They're just reaching in with all, like you just mentioned before, the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, reaching in. I mean, that's what kicked off that entire thing, what was it? Shoot.
Bundy Ranch.
Exactly, the Bundy Ranch thing. It all started with the Bureau of Land Management.
Yeah.
But what about you, Eric? What are some things that stand out in your mind as far as repressive government control over dissenting minds and off-the-grid living?
Well, the control of dissenting minds begins with the education system, which is a huge topic unto itself. Mm-hmm. But that's what enables them to get away with their overreach into our lives via regulation and via legislating at either the city, the county, or the state or national level. They have all these laws about what you can or can't do. You own property? Well, first of all, you don't really own it because you pay rent on it via income property tax. But let's say you think you own your property. They will tell you whether or not you can build a fence or a shed or a house. And if you do build one, they want to look at it and make sure that you did it by their way, their rules. And that's how they control us. They don't allow you to build the infrastructure that would be required to live sustainably as an either a homestead family or a homesteading village community. The regulators prevent those sorts of things from happening with zoning laws and with various other mechanisms, and that's a really big problem.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, that's the whole idea of that. How quickly did we skip from? You know, obviously these laws are rooted in the fact that, you know, it's public safety. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that they need to make sure that fence is built correctly, otherwise it could fall on a child or whatever. And, and that obviously sounds logical when you think of it that way. But look how quickly we went from just absolute freedom on your own land to you can't even put up a structure without getting permits and regulations and speaking to the government. That doesn't sound like freedom to me. That's outrageous.
No.
I mean, it's, you know, the permits, the fees, the zoning, the, you know, code violations. That's the big one. When you get into, you know, these people that we're going to talk about in the show, they're getting kicked off their land. They basically use it as an excuse to be like, oh, there's too many cars in your line, or, you know, the fence is built properly, or it's too, and it's always about the neighbors. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that. And these guys live 10, 20 miles away from their neighbors, yet they claim that it's the neighbors that are having an issue with some kind of structure. It's over the top.
Yeah, the weeds in your front yard are in an eyesore, so we're going to fine you.
Well, it's literally that ridiculous. I mean, some of these guys are like, his bushes had to be pulled back, and it's just outrageous. But, you know, I mean, then the other ones that I would see that stand out to me are essentially like the illegalization of competition of any kind. You know, anything that's going to stand out. Like, I mean, we could even take solar panels today. And the whole idea about solar panels is so you can buy them yourself, put them in yourself, and not have to pay anybody anything. Work off your own energy. But now what we're seeing today is they've manipulated that entire market to where you're basically just renting them from somebody else and paying again. It just, it's that's another control system in place. But I would say that the next one for me would be the patents on seeds and things like that.
Oh boy, here we go.
You know, because yep. When you think about that, that's a huge one for me. Because when we said about the no front yard gardens, no personal food and medicine, I think that's what that's rooted in for sure.
Oh yeah.
The idea that we are potentially able to grow our own natural food and you know, medicines for that matter, cannabis being a huge one. And that's, you know, once they get the control of those seeds and they patent the idea that they can only be used one season, they get complete control over everything moving forward.
You might as well just say, let's go ahead and put a patent on your life.
Well, that's exactly what it is. I mean, you know, you shouldn't be able to patent anything like that. That's like a natural living organism.
Yeah.
But I think Monsanto is one of the only ones that have done that. And it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
But the next one for me would be water control. When you think about the fact that water is being controlled from every angle at this point, like you're not even allowed to collect rainwater.
No.
Right.
You know, and you just follow this list down. What you're seeing is that they're actively finding ways to control any of these resources that will allow you to live on your own in any fashion. There are multiple examples. One guy that is all over the news, his name is Tyler Truitt. I don't know if you guys are familiar with his story.
No.
He's a retired Marine veteran, and it's the exact same kind of scenario we just outlaid right there, where he moved into his own land, created an entire scenario where he's self-sustainable, has his own power, has his own water, has everything going on, and even moved in an entire house. It's not even a trailer. It doesn't have wheels or anything, but it is a movable house. And they're basically trying to kick him off his land for saying that it's not allowed there. And it's just crazy. He owns the land, so that doesn't even make sense in the first place when you really think about what true freedom should mean. But the idea that they're basically saying that he has to hook up to the main power grid. And that's always the defining factor right there, is that you have to hook up to the power grid.
Have you heard of the theory, or maybe it's actuality, I don't really know, but I've heard several instances where they're talking about people, well, forcing people on grid, like basically getting into center of cities, like city centers, to get them on grid away from the outer limits of the county, that way so they can deem the county lines, or, you know, beyond the city limit lines into the county as a natural preserve or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like Agenda 21 kind of stuff, this larger agenda to corral everybody into more tightly controlled zones where there's cameras on every corner, where the police are 1 minute away, versus out in the county. For instance, I lived in a county in Oregon where the sheriff's department, they were 30 minutes away at best. And at one point when they were having budget problems, they basically wrote everyone a letter saying, look, even in a life-threatening emergency, we can't promise to get there any sooner than 2 hours. And that's, you know, to me, I wasn't too worried about it. I was like, well, that's just as well. We don't need them anyway. Mm-hmm. But the idea is they can't maintain physical control over the movement of all the people and running their equipment if everybody's scattered out into the hills. And they want everyone living all within the tightly controlled zones. And they can't directly legislate that yet, because I don't think that the population would have it. No. You know, I think they would probably, you know, incite a revolt sooner than they want one. But they're trying to, you know, come up with other ways to pressure people out of there, including coming up with, you know, new laws that ban them from doing this or that and forcing them into, you know, moving out of their off-grid homestead because they can't afford to pay the fines they would accrue by staying there.
Yeah.
Right. Like you said that too, the revolt until they want it, right? Because they obviously ultimately want that in the end of the day.
Yeah.
It's, you know, create with their next move here. But, you know, what we're talking about here is exactly what's happening in the California desert with with a guy named Joey Gallo, as well as Mr. Casinata, I'm sorry. And Casinata is actually a pastor, lived there for 22 years without any problem with the government, any problem with anybody. Actually, funny enough, he actually owns the little church that they used for both the Kill Bill movies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so he's been there for 22 years, completely self-sustainable, out there on his own everything.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden now, like he's saying, they're coming in to basically run him out of the land. And he ultimately had to move. And it's just like Eric was saying, the idea is to kind of push them closer together because they can't have control of everybody when they're scattered.
Yeah.
And it's just such a shame to see that. It's the same concept. They pushed the, you know, code violations on him. And, you know, it's 22 years he's been living without problem. You know, I just don't see it now. It's all, you know, you can obviously take this one step back away from the conspiracy theory and say that they're just trying to hassle him for money. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think that's the case.
Nah.
I think this is just such an obvious conspiracy towards, you know, corralling people closer together and stopping them from having access to their own resources.
You know how they have membership cards, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to shop at Costco, you got to be a member, right? So you could choose not to shop there. But I was thinking about this whole the Agenda 21, where they're corralling people into more concentrated areas. You know, after a while, they could say, well, if you want to live here, you're going to have to get this card in order to make transactions and purchases.
Right.
So, oh, yeah. I mean, you really don't have a choice but to buy into that system once you get corralled into there.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's kind of like what Sweet Tea was saying the last show about the cards from prison, that they take your money and they transfer it onto that card for you.
Yeah.
And so then you're forced to use it with the fees and everything else. They're basically just stealing one more.
And then to incorporate what you said earlier a few episodes ago about civil asset forfeiture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If I said it right that time.
Yeah, that's correct. Just one more illegal action right there.
Yeah.
But, you know, for those that think that this is not, you know, this is like a violent change for these people. Like, they're coming out with SWAT teams and vests and assault rifles and surrounding these guys' houses, basically, and forcing them off the land. I mean, if you own this land, how is that even legally a possibility if you're not breaking any laws, per se? I mean, you can call them code violations, but in reality, when you're kind of holding to the Constitution, they're not doing anything wrong.
Yep.
And yet they're being forced off their land. I mean, if that's not a conspiracy, I don't know what is.
It wasn't even, 150 years, not even 150 years ago, when you could just go out to the land and build your own homestead.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing about it.
Right.
Where did this start? Where did this start, Eric? Enlighten us. Where did this bullshit start?
You know, it goes all the way back to the earliest civilizations. They all had these systems of control in whatever areas they controlled. However, in those early days, they needed the outlying of the civilization, the frontier, to be settled by people who were going to more or less be markets for them, and they needed people to basically tame the wilds so that eventually they could get in there and exploit them. And now we've reached the peak of expansion on this planet to where there's no more wild territory really to take over, and so they don't want people out there anymore. But in our country, in the United States, I'd say really the takeover in this department really kicked off in around the beginning of the 20th century, and we all know the story of the Federal Reserve and the income tax and all of those things were a big part of it. But what it allowed the government to do was to expand to such a level to where they could afford manpower to enforce all of this stuff, because it's a law that doesn't have anyone to enforce it is pretty much moot, and no one's going to follow it anyway.
Yeah.
And so they have to have county regulators. You know, all those guys that are driving around looking for code violations, someone has to pay them salary, someone has to pay for their truck, and all this other business. And so,
yeah, our taxes.
It's a combination of the expansion of the government's revenue via taxation and, of course, you know, extortion via fines and fees and stuff, but also the banking system with the unlimited power to lend and government's ability to go into huge debt. And so I think it's just sort of compounded over the century, and it jumped with the, you know, after post-World War II, the growth of the economy there, and then when they went off the gold standard, it pretty much just allowed them to print money all day long, and nobody's held accountable for where that's going to come from, and that gives them the power to enforce these things and to pay people salaries. Because you look at it this way, your neighbor is not going to come and mess with you, especially if you're armed and you're willing to stand up for yourself. No one else is going to come bother you about what you're doing on your land unless he's A, being paid, and B, has the assurance that the people paying him have got his back and will send in the cavalry if you resist him.
Yeah.
And so they're basically pitting us against each other. The county inspector probably lives out in the country too, and he's probably just another guy like you. But he's been pitted against you by an organization that is basically paying for his retirement. And so he's just going to take what the easiest path is. And so, yeah, it's a real sad situation.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm taking that forward to today. What we were just recently talking about, even before the show, is that there is a gentleman by the name of Mike Antonovich, who is a Los Angeles County supervisor. And he actually created these teams called nuisance abatement teams. And their entire job is to go out to these rural locations and pick out code violations. Not everywhere, the rural locations. So their job is specifically to go out to these off-the-grid livers and find reasons to bring them back in.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just crazy. And it's always victimless crimes, little misdemeanors and code violations.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely crazy to me. There was even a court in Florida that actually ruled that unplugging from municipal services is illegal.
What?
Yep. It was a case in Cape Coral in Florida.
Wow.
And it, I mean, that's a precedent right there. We always talk about those in the show. That's a huge precedent right there moving forward. So now they even have a legal background to say that unless you're using our services, you're breaking the law.
Yeah. I don't understand how anybody could not see that as flat out extortion.
Right.
I mean, it's what, just because they've got a uniform or a badge and most of the times a gun, that makes them a legalized mafia?
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on.
Biggest gang in the country.
The biggest gang in the world.
It goes back to, the reason people don't see it is because everyone has been hypnotized. Everyone has been mind controlled via education and media, you know, movies and television and such. But the power of a badge and a uniform is very strong.
Yeah.
And that goes way back too. I mean, the very earliest people that started this con on humanity, they donned these expensive robes and these fancy hats and these, they carried these shiny scepters with jewels and gems, and just the sight of them set them apart from people who were wearing flaxen or woolen hand-spun clothes, and it gave them the image of power, and that image is more compelling even than the gun that their soldiers, or the spear that their soldiers carry.
Yeah.
And so I feel like the real work, while we do have to dismantle the institutions of force that run us, that's never going to happen until we dismantle the image that they have the legitimacy and that they have the right to do all of these things, such as passing all these regulations that people are getting kicked off their land, and sometimes people are even dying over them, like Corrin Gaines. I mean, she died fighting this system that demands that it thinks it owns her, and she said, no, you don't. And I'm not certainly, you know, thinking that what she did was the greatest idea, but I have to respect her courage, because, I mean, if you're willing to stand up for yourself, you can expect that they're gonna come after you. They don't want people to realize this, but it's our work, I feel like, to help people to realize that yes, we can stand up to them, we can defy them, and we do have not only the right, but we have the obligation to do it.
And the damn numbers for it.
Mm-hmm.
That would just be amazing if we could there was just like this light switch that turned everybody's thought on, and all of a sudden we just said no,
right.
No, you know. Man, what a revolution that would be.
We've touched on that a few times, the idea that it's possible that we are actually the majority, and we only think we're the minority as whatever you want to call it, truthers, conspiracy theorists. We only think we're the minority because we're told that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's probably so many people out there that are keeping quiet because they don't want to be cast like that. But I would be willing to bet that more people than we think right now are on the same page.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a good example, you can just Google any alternative source or any YouTube alternative media source, and you will have millions and millions of views, you know, hundreds of thousands of subscribers per channel. And there are thousands of these channels out there.
Right.
So there's a lot of people on our side.
Yeah, I think.
Well, it reminds me of that poll that I recently found. I don't remember who took it, but something to the degree of 9% of the people that were surveyed support either presidential candidate. And I've heard things like the government, the federal government, has like a 13% approval ratio, or even lower. And that's to me an indicator of the fact that we aren't in the minority. Everybody's pissed, but what's going on is we don't have agreement amongst ourselves as to who the problem is, what the problem is, who do we actually go after about this, or how do we go about making changes. But clearly, most people that you ask today are probably going to agree that the government has overstepped its bounds and that things are out of control.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody knows what to do about it. Everyone's kind of like, well, but what do you do? You know, that's always kind of the follow-up question that they have.
Well, like any good cancer, you use radiation most of the time, so you know, that could be an option, right? I won't go into too many details.
We built all those nuclear power plants for that contingency.
Yeah, I think
it all centers back to the whole idea of cognitive dissonance and the fact that people just will not allow themselves to see it for what it really is because it just shakes them too much, you know?
And they're too comfortable. They're too complacent.
Right. Well, you know, on that flip, then, you know, what would you say, Eric, is the best first step for those completely immersed in modern American society to transition into some kind of a sustainable off the grid style of living?
Well, you got to research and you got to study and learn, and partly that has to do with learning about the history of this and learning the real story as to what's going on. But I feel like that can happen simultaneously while you're doing your homework at night on the computer. In the day, you can be going out into your community and you can be getting in touch with other people who are on the ground, growing food, making things. We need to learn how to create things for ourselves again, because we are a society of people who are totally clueless as to how to create the things we need to live. Nobody knows how to make clothes, tools, shoes. Very few people know how to grow food, and because of that, we're dependent on these powers that have been taking advantage of our ignorance, which they, of course, helped to create. But we have to learn how to do stuff again. But that to me is the very first step, is to figure out how to do something for ourselves. And growing food is a big part of it. I mean, if you even if you can't make an axe, you can probably find someone who will give you one or trade you one for something, and then you can use that axe for a really long time. But you got to eat several times a day, and if you can't feed yourself, you're going to have a hard time doing anything else. And it's actually not that hard to grow food. I mean, there's a learning curve for figuring out how to run a full-time garden that's going to produce year-round, and the succession and the planting and all of these things. It's actually very complicated, but anyone can put some seeds in the ground and water them and start to pay attention to that process. And so I feel like that's something that really is a good starting point. And getting an education in permaculture and in any kind of organic gardening, any kind of non-industrial farming kind of food system, can learn how to do that even without any teachers whatsoever, even without even books. I mean, you can just practice on your own. If you were living out in the middle of nowhere with no library, no books, but you ended up with some seeds, you could figure out on your own, trial and error, how to get some food out of that. And so that's a big step.
Yeah, we interviewed Jared with Wide Awake Media a while back, and he's starting his own social networking site. Do you have anything similar to where like-minded people can connect or network?
There are, you know, I only know of them in regional areas. For instance, in the Ashland area in Oregon, there are a couple organizations like SPRIG, which is the Siskiyou Permaculture Regional Group, and there are web groups specific to your location. Now, there is one called Nextdoor, which is actually all over, and it's not specifically for food growing or for sustainability stuff, but it's just kind of like a social media group.
Oh, they have an app too, right?
Yeah. It's a well-known thing. You basically sign up for it, and then you have a forum where people post what's going on, and you can send messages to each other. Yeah. We've used it in our area. There's really not a lot of alternative people. We live in a valley where there's quite a bit of conventional farmers, but we kind of keep abreast of what all is happening in terms of there's been squatters in the area who are kind of robbing people, and they tell us who to look out for and tell us what cars they drive. It's sort of like a public information channel, and that's the kind of thing that if you get on that in your local area, you can put ads up and say, hey, I want to start growing food. Who knows how to grow gardens, and who wants to get together and have exchanges of seeds or exchanges of produce, or who can teach me how to do something? Like, I feel like one of the major untapped resources, especially for young people who are in the world today, go out and seek out your elders. Find out who in the area still remembers how to do stuff, who knows how to work on engines, or who knows how to build something out of wood or use hand tools or any of those things. Not all of them are on the internet, but still, there are actually quite a few more people on the internet now of the older generation than there were 20 years ago. So I think that that's a viable option for people. But yeah, get out and get to know your community.
Exactly.
Advocate it if it's not already happening. Call for it, and you'd be surprised how many people might want to jump on board and say, "Hey, I like that idea. Let's do that."
Yeah.
Community potluck, things like that.
Yeah, and starting at the community level, we always say is the most important aspect. Is you really got to start within yourself and then branch out into your community. That's the first place we should be active at. There's actually a great site Derek Brose talks about a lot, where basically there's a concept of creating these freedom cells, which is kind of he's from consciousresistance.com and Activist Post, and it's kind of a combination of what we just talked about and then enrolling in activism as well. And it's an interesting concept. But anything that can connect you further with your local community is a fantastic idea.
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking, you mentioned like people that work on cars and they have these certain skill sets. And I was just thinking about the whole control mechanism. You ever notice new cars today? You ever look under the hood? Like, you need an engineer rockets degree to work on them now.
Yeah, they're all computerized.
Computerized. They got all these special plastic and mold coverings on the part. You can't even hardly change an alternator anymore.
That goes for most things, too. I mean, even electronics and things are like the little pamphlet they give you for instruction is always written by engineers for engineers, so it's not really very easy to read. And, unless it's something like a VCR, it tends to be complicated,
it makes me think of in the early days of radio, people built their own radios. You could build a radio if you had a crystal copper wire in a cardboard box. And, I mean, that's the kind of thing that technology has progressed in such a way is that it's really limiting who could actually work on and maintain it. Yeah. And I think that's very dangerous, although it is serving the purpose of the elite who wants a centralized control of everything. Mm-hmm. But a solution to that could be for us to start to advocate and try and make use of technology that is retro or, you know, vintage style. I've always wanted to see someone manufacture cars that are built like the Model A Ford, where, you know, there's no bells and whistles. It's just a simple engine that anyone can open up and figure out how to work on.
Yeah.
I mean, why doesn't someone do that? I mean, I know that these new fancy cars are real nice and all, but it seems like you could build one of these things cheap and you could undercut the competition. You could buy a brand new car for a few thousand dollars.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, I'm not a car person myself. I don't work on engines. I don't know much about that. But I know that I would be more interested in learning if there was something that was actually achievable versus these, you know, computerized things today. I can't figure all that stuff out. Nor do I want to take the time to.
Yeah, exactly. You know, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, further, I'm following up on that. In permaculture, there's these concepts of there's a retrofit. There's a quick fix, there's a retrofit, and then there's the ultimate permaculture. And quick fix is just like what you can do right away. Retrofit is kind of how where you tweak your existing systems to be better. And then our ultimate permaculture is like you have to design everything differently from the beginning and from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like as a quick fix, we could learn more about, we could get together with neighbors and learn all these things. But as an ultimate solution, I feel like we really need to lessen our dependence on some of these advanced technologies and some of these high energy technologies. And that's not a super popular notion, but I feel like we'd stand a lot better chance to live bioregionally and to live sustainably if we weren't all demanding such kinds of technologies in our daily lives, if we weren't all insisting on having a phone and a computer and a car and all of these things. It's, you know, I mean, at this point we need them, and I'm not trying to say let's throw them all out today, but I guess I feel like we ought to design for a longer term solution, which would be to change our lifestyle so that we are more able to take care of ourselves at a local level.
Well, what's interesting about that is, I'm going back to the whole automobile thing, in the 50s, GM released a car that was primarily electric, and it got up to like 300 miles to the gallon. And the government came in and literally took the cars and buried them in the desert. And only two survived. So, I mean, yeah, the technology is there.
Oh yeah, there's a massive track record for that. I mean, all the way back to, you know, Henry Ford, and the, you know, the original car was designed to not run on. It was I think it was either hemp oil or corn oil.
Right, right.
And, you know, and the idea is that that was the way it was originally designed, and that they chose to use the other because it was profitable.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the entire country. You know, it's everything. But there's a great website, or rather a YouTube channel that we just did an article about called Primitive Technology.
Oh, yeah.
You should check it out. It blew me away. I was caught in this website for hours.
Yeah.
It's this guy from Australia. Doesn't even speak on the videos. That's why people think it's so popular. He's gotten over almost 3 million subscribers in like 3 months.
I've seen that guy.
Yeah. It's so entertaining.
That guy's awesome.
And because he does everything, he doesn't have any tools. He does it all like primitive style.
Yeah.
So he's even like breaking wood with other rocks and like slamming in. And, you know, he even made a little furnace out of clay and like melted down iron. So it's amazing.
Tiles. He built those clay tiles.
Right. And bow and arrow. I mean, anything like learning. I just thought it was so perfect for learning these skills that we probably should know that we just have completely lost, you know.
And that's the thing we got to remember is that it's not really that big a deal. When you think about the process of making something, you know, it all has to start somewhere. The materials have to come from somewhere. Someone has to create something that creates the mold for the part or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's all human-based. And that's what people forget. It's like some human made that or designed it.
Right. It's just so important for self-sustainability. You know,
yeah.
Learning how to do these things yourself is a very, very good first step. But Eric, you know, what would you say for, like, let's say for those that want to live a self-sufficient, self-sustainable, off-the-grid life, yet they still desire to be a part of the change and stay involved at like a community level? What would you recommend for them, as opposed to getting completely off the grid, or is even that possible?
No, I mean, I think you can do both. I think that the trick is to set yourself up in a situation where you're not going to get lost in the system of trying to make change. I mean, there's no end to the work. We're never going to get there, especially with one person. And so you can get lost in the battle. And I feel like allocating the right amount of time to just be on the land and to just be doing simple natural things. And then from that reflective time, that time that you spend in quiet and with your garden or just watching the river, that is where I feel like the inspiration and the the inner power comes from, so that when we go into the system and we speak with our neighbors, or if we get online and we put out a video or anything like that, we're going to be able to speak with more clarity and more vision than if we're constantly just in the game and we're constantly working on trying to fight the system. And so I feel like it's hard, though. I mean, it's hard because what you get is, if you want to live off-grid, if you want to live in a more homestead kind of environment, you kind of have to get out away from the city, both for the reason of that's where there's nature and acreage available, and because of the regulations. It's like, in the city, you're going to have way too many laws that are going to prevent you from doing anything off-grid. And so you have this sort of distance that you have to travel on. And the irony of it is, I find all the people that I know that have these homesteads and that have the sort of permaculture dream that I've always wanted for myself, like a house and a greenhouse and all these things that can grow in, we end up driving all the time to get into the cities, because it's like you live an hour away from everything. So a lot of time in the car, a lot of fossil fuel burned, and there really is no easy answer, because what I would like to see are more communities where we are far removed from the cities, but in that zone we have enough population, meaning like a small community, a village, where we don't need or want to go into the system as much, and where we don't feel like we are always having to go shopping for things because we produce more things ourselves.
Now, yeah, even within that community, you can have a barter system.
Yeah, I mean, but the garden's not enough. I mean, most people don't realize how hard it is to really eat out of your garden alone. Yeah. If you're raising animals or you're hunting meat, it gets a little easier, but oils, spices, salt, all of these things are very hard to create on your own, and they take infrastructure, and even just like your grains and beans. I mean, that's a lot of work to grow all that grains and beans just for one family. And if you're talking a village of 30, you have to spend a pretty good number of hours every year trying to produce that crop.
Yeah.
But the challenge that I feel like, or the response to that I would want for myself would be to have my own homestead, my own house, be relatively low energy, off-grid, maybe some like solar panels and LED lights for nighttime. But the computer, the phone technology, all of that stuff, I think should be away from the house. And I think in an ideal village, we would have a community center where you've got like a library, right? You've got computers, you've got, you know, booths where you can get in there and Skype and put up videos and things like that. But you don't have to have that in your daily life. And you don't need, everyone doesn't need one. We don't all need to have that. We can share those technologies. That's going to require a shift in our thinking and a little bit more of a cooperative culture mentality, but it is more practical. Not everybody needs a chainsaw. I mean, we can all kind of share some of these tools and vehicles and things like that if we coordinate and get in the right sort of situations. But it's very hard to get in those situations. It's very hard to get set up in that kind of a place where you're going to be able to stably live the rest of your life. It's a lot of turnover in the eco-village intentional community scene. People don't usually just move to one and stay there. And so there really isn't. I've been looking. I haven't really seen a good example of a really permanently designed village that's just as thriving and successful as we could hope it would be. It's still a work in progress, even after 40 years of people trying.
Wow.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's another good side of that dynamic that we talked about on the Cure Your Own Cancer show, is getting away from all those electric signals and the you know, different waves that are being emitted from all the electronics we always have around ourselves. So having that separate room in the house is a fantastic idea.
I came across something else too. What's that? Spring mattresses, you know, the coil springs. Mm-hmm. Well, if you think about the Wi-Fi signals and radiation coming into the home, those go right through those coils into your body when you sleep.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was on one of those smart meter articles.
Hmm. How interesting. Now, Eric, there's one of our writers, Anthony. I don't think you've actually met him, possibly, but he lives in Alaska right now, and he recently just told me that he found out that he's got 25 acres of like untouched wildland.
Wow.
Yeah, and so that might be a future destination we genuinely are discussing possible future plans to create a homestead out there.
That would be awesome. Yeah. 25 acres,
right?
Yeah, you can
maybe
do that.
We can see some collaboration.
Yeah.
Yeah. But getting land is one of the hardest parts. It's hard to afford it. It's hard to get, you know, people together to do it, because, as I said, going out there alone or with just one family is really hard and not that fun. It's like you need some teamwork. And getting people to share the cost of land and share the ownership of land is very difficult at the personal, you know, at the personal interrelational level, just because people fight over control. So I've been through that a few times. I've been part of it. I moved out to Oregon to join a community that was a back-to-the-land kind of community. We actually bought 420 acres right around the Oregon-California border, and we were going to build this whole community. And it all seemed so great when we read about it online. But when you get down to it, people disagree, and then people take their toys and go home, and they pull out and they want their money back, and there's just infighting, and it's very hard to get people to agree for long enough of a time. Because, I mean, it takes generations to build something like this. It's not like you can just do it in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And so to get people to agree and stay in one place for that long is really hard, especially in our sort of ADD society where everybody's just constantly needing new diversions and distractions. And so there's some serious challenges to overcome, but I think that the motivation is growing for people to want this kind of thing. And as it gets harder and harder to succeed in the conventional economy, more and more people are going to be turning to these sort of counter-economic pursuits, which I feel like you have to have a land base to do that. You can't really thrive in your own economy if you're renting an apartment in the city and you're, you know, you're paying for your electricity and your everything. It's just, you have to go get a job to live that way.
So did that, do you guys still have that property, or did you, have you disbanded that idea?
No, it basically went into dispute when the community fell apart, and the community continued to take in money, not so much the community all in agreement, but the people that were running the community. So it continued to take in money even after the things weren't looking very good and it was going bust. And so there were lawsuits. There were some people that were, that lent money to this community and couldn't get paid back. And so they sued for the land. And there was a big long lawsuit just last year, you know, or maybe it was early this year, like December or January this year. It finally sold. There was a lawsuit to find out who was going to get it. And the original four investors who put the money up to buy the land got title to it, and they sold it and got their money back, almost all of it. But everyone else who invested, including myself, got nothing back. We all just got burned. And so that's the story of a lot of them. I mean, it happened with Gulf Gulch down in Chile as well. These kinds of things happen a lot. Because partly it's just the human nature to, I mean, I don't want to say it's human nature, but it's definitely easy for humans to get into that space of divisiveness. But also sometimes I think that it's an easy scam. I mean, it's an easy way to trick people into thinking that they finally got this thing, and you can advertise and pay people with promises, and then when it comes to the end of, you know, end of the story, someone made off with all the money. And it's hard, you know, with the bad taste in people's mouth for this whole thing. But I haven't let it stop me. I mean, I lost the money, but that doesn't matter. That's just a learning curve. And, you know, we've got to do this no matter how much it costs us.
Yeah, it's imperative. I mean, it's I think that it's probably one of the most important things for anyone trying to break away right now, is just to really embrace all these things we've talked about today. I mean, you know, when you really break all this down, it really comes back to control, which a lot of things tend to. And it's about the government wanting to control the way you live your life, the way that you treat yourself, the way that you, you know, medicate yourself, the way that you eat.
Yep.
And it's really, you know, and that ties in with profit like it always does. But, it, you know, it's really something that it's, if you're not going to take any direct action today to change your lifestyle, at least learn more about it and at least spread the word and opens people's minds. Because like Eric was saying, like Dara was saying, that we are stronger together. If we can collect ourselves as one group or one community or one nation, we have more control to be able to have these things change on a long-term scale. And on that note, let's roll into some current events.
Current events.
Now, the one that I like to start this off, because it really ties in with what we're, and we've talked about this recently in the past, but the CDC recently launched a war on kratom, and they're calling it an emerging public health threat. If you can believe that, Eric, are you familiar with kratom? Kratom leaf?
That's ridiculous.
No, I'm not.
It's essentially an all natural leaf that it's people compare it to a really mild opiate, basically, but it's all natural, has very very small, like if any, side effects, and there's very mild withdrawal symptoms if used an extensively long period of time, but it has immense medical value. And now it's we're just talking further back about their control and trying to control the competition. This is just one more reach on that. And they're basically, to call it an emerging public health threat is unreal, considering that they just legalized ketamine for the use of antidepressant properties.
What?
And
Special K?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I remember getting high off that shit.
Exactly. I mean, it's more considered a party drug than anything else.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of side effects and different, you know, this is something that's all natural that has positive effects. Like, and the story we talked about a few weeks ago is a friend of mine had successfully transitioned from four different medications onto just taking kratom.
Yeah.
And then it became illegal in Alabama, and she had to go back to the medications. And she's a teacher, so she asked not to be spoken about because she's a teacher, doesn't want to lose her job. But she had such a hard time dealing with the kids on these medications. It just took her life from her. And this Kratom Leaf gave it back to her. And then because they weren't making money the way that they do from these medications, that they had to make it illegal. And now we're seeing it all over the country.
You notice anything with medical or medicinal value is usually outlawed, whereas something with medical asset or medical investment is what's out there?
Oh, yeah. It all comes back to the profit they can make from
it.
Yeah, and cartels don't like competition. You know, they want to sell you their products, and they don't want you getting hold of something that's actually going to help you. Because if people get cured or get recovered, then they're not going to continue to come back for drugs.
And exactly.
So it's the biggest thing that I see going on here with the CDC, the AMA, or any of these medical organizations is the conflict of interest. It's a blatant conflict of interest that they're making so much money off of all of these products and all of these medical services, and that they have zero motivation. Even if they were good-hearted people, they have zero motivation to actually help people get better. Yeah. And so, I hadn't heard of this. How do you spell it? You said crap?
It's Kratom. Kratom.
Okay, Kratom. Yeah, I mean, I hadn't heard of that. if you'd asked me about it, I would have been able to predict, but of course they're going to ban it. If it's actually constructive and helpful to people, then why would they want that? I mean, exactly. I look at these people, you might look at Mordor or whatever Satan, if you're into that paradigm. It's like I just assume that anything that they're going to do is going to be against our interests. Mm-hmm. And that's why I feel like the main task is to break the image of legitimacy that they have. And I want more people to see it like I see it. Like, they hear the CDC says something. Oh, well, that must mean the opposite is probably true. You have to just assume that these crooks are going to be trying to fix the break the system.
Right. And the CDC already has a very terrible background right now, and even just very shortly back. I mean, talking about the whole vaccine scenario, and as much as people like to discount that, it was a documented case where they literally trashed documents that showed that autism was connected to this one specific vaccine. Yeah. And then there's much more, CDC had a whole scandal where they were connected with Coca-Cola, where they were trying to make Coca-Cola seem less dangerous. I mean, it's just crazy. And then we're sitting here listening to anything they say, like they're some government, like the fact that they somehow have some moral, superiority over everybody else. What they say matters, and it's just they're obviously conflict of interest in everything they do right now.
It kind of goes to what we started off this conversation about, the idea and the image of an authority figure. Mm-hmm. Is the same thing. It's a government institute, so they must know what they're talking about.
Right, exactly.
Authority.
Yeah, we give them that. We superimpose that concept on them without even thinking twice about it.
Yeah.
Even knowing all the...
Because no one wants to take personal accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. not no one.
If I understand, wasn't the CDC, didn't it begin under a different name, like a chemical company? Or they were a chemical company, and they were the American chemical. I don't remember the exact words, but that's basically what they started off as, and then they realized, oh, wow, that doesn't really give us a very good, positive image. So disease control, that sounds better. We're going to control disease.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that they were rooted in the sort of pharmaceutical, petrochemical industry.
I wouldn't doubt it.
That's where they came.
Oh yeah,
it actually makes kind of sense now that you say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny how we have these privatized ideas, or even like the kind of Federal Reserve thing, where they're masquerading as some kind of public service. Such a joke. That's just too bad. But moving on to a little more positive news, there was we've talked, like you just talked earlier, about civil asset forfeiture. Now, we saw the one in Nebraska, right? Now we're actually seeing it happening in California, where they're trying to end civil asset forfeiture.
Really?
And it's such a great thing. Civil asset forfeiture is such a... It's legalized theft.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's all it really is. And now we're finally seeing people wise up to it and say, hey, they're basically robbing us for for cash. And I even included a clip on last week on the show where there's an officer's talking about what they use it for, and it's just a joke. He's just talking about just something we'd like to have in the office for fun. Like there was an incident like a margarita machine and stuff like that
for police
offices,
prostitutes.
But so California is now coming out with their attempts at trying to close this loophole.
Good.
And they did passed the first part of it, but as you know how government works, it's not always guaranteed.
Yeah.
But it's just such a positive thing to see that there is change happening. And it's also a good thing to focus on the fact that even though it goes against the whole government narrative, it still can happen if people work together.
Is that a current bill that's up for vote, or is it proposed? What's the status of it?
The California Assembly voted 66-8 to pass a bill that basically bolsters restrictions on it.
Oh, okay.
And so that's where we're at now. But it's, you know, it's everything like this. It's not guaranteed in the future, but it's moving forward in the right direction. And that's what, and especially the fact that it's not just California now. Nebraska's already done it. California's doing it. I guarantee more states already have it in the works.
I'm surprised a state like Colorado or Oregon hasn't done it, since they have legalized or at least decriminalized marijuana.
They probably have much stronger police lobbies there, I would imagine. I mean, that's what it all comes back to. Just influence. Yeah. But that's just a good positive thing to focus on.
Oh, another positive thing. Do you want to talk about the privatization of prisons?
Yeah, go ahead. That's a good spin off our... we did a show about that recently.
Yeah, so now apparently it's... I don't remember the whole article off the top of my head, obviously, but the federal government, Supreme Court, is saying how they're trying to deprivatize all these private prisons now.
Yeah, now we shouldn't be celebrating just yet, because it's not, again, they're trying to. The Justice Department announced it's trying to end use of for-profit prisons.
Yeah.
Right, but so really it sounds nicer than it is, because what they're really doing is they're stopping certain prisoners from going to private prisons when they should be in federal prison. So they're not ending for-profit, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
And the great thing about it was the moment they announced it, prison stocks plummeted. The private prisons.
Really?
Yeah.
See, so that's what it takes, really.
Exactly. Money. That's what it all comes back to.
Yeah, bury those stocks.
Yeah, Eric, we did a great show about the just for-profit prison industry and how it affects our country. And it was a very interesting show. And then the very next week, we saw this pop up. So it's like, hey, all right.
It was cool.
Yeah. Positive move in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are positive things being done. And anytime you see stuff like that, it usually comes from people who are really giving their all. If you're going up against the system, people that are trying to just put change these laws and make ballot initiatives to make changes, they don't usually have a lot of money. They're just giving their blood, sweat, and tears, and they're going around rallying people to the cause and seeking donations, and it's always a massive amount of work and dedication that people put into that. And so I always try and give shout-outs to whoever it is that's working hard to try and create these things.
Yeah.
With the prison thing, I saw that article, and I don't fully understand what's going on, and I feel like, yeah, I mean, that's a step in the right direction. I don't know for sure, though, that it's... It sounds like, I feel like in a lot of cases, the powers that be, not necessarily like Congress or the president, but people that sit at the real top, the real decision makers, I feel like occasionally they strategically give the people a bone, kind of like let them have, let them,
you know,
like,
first, yeah, people, they, yeah.
It's like, it helps people to maybe, you know, to simmer down and not get too riled up and not get too ready to revolt. And it helps them to think that we're moving ahead. And don't get me wrong, I'm all for it. And yet I'm always a little skeptical of this. I mean, I have a positive outlook on what's going to happen in the world, but I don't think that we're really moving in a positive direction. I think that the system is clamping down still.
Oh, yeah.
And that anything that happens, it either is their sort of attempt to pacify people or distract them and get them to look over here while they're doing something else over here, or sometimes they just lose battles, but in the long term they're going to take it right back, and they have a really good strategy that way. So I mean, with the prison industry, I would definitely prefer there to be, you know, fewer for-profit prisons, but honestly that seems like too little too late. I want to see the prison system shut down altogether. I want incarceration of especially nonviolent criminals. Now, when it comes to people that are violent, we might have a discussion there about how we can contain them and keep them from hurting people. But I would say that most of the people in those prisons probably wouldn't hurt anybody if we gave them proper rehabilitation. And I've seen some really good, you know, short videos on the internet about different countries and how their prison systems actually try and rehabilitate the people. And they actually do. They have much better success rates. And so, you know, there's just so much work that has to be done. And We have to take our victories where they come, I understand. And yet I feel like we got a long way to go.
Yeah, and speaking on that, like, you can go back kind of like with the esoteric type of view is, I think it was either the 50s or 60s, Russia did this study on pyramids. So they built this pyramid, and they did different experiments with it. Like, they'd put plant seeds in it and then grow the plants outside of it. And any seeds that were harvested within this pyramid had a 400% more yield. They also used this stone. They put some kind of black and white stone, granite stone, inside of it and built half of a prison from it. And any inmates housed in those sections did not go back to jail. They were rehabilitated just from that positive frequency.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about that a few times, just the idea of that, you know, it's a very real thing, the frequency of life, if you will.
I agree. There's definitely something to those sorts of ideas, and we understand so little, and we live under the monopoly of institutional science, which really discredits anything that they can't empirically prove or that doesn't fit their agenda already. And so exactly. I feel that there's a lot of room to expand into some of these other technologies that are actually what the ancients used. I mean, the ancients were able to accomplish archaeological feats that we couldn't even match today.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They were paying attention to some of this stuff, and they had some knowledge that we seem to have either forgotten or that's been kept hidden from us. And so
both.
I think that's definitely something to pursue and learn more about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on the last story for the day, it's another negative, as most of the stuff tends to be a little negative, is that there's an Orwellian California bill that just passed the assembly.
Oh,
and
no.
It's kind of shocking, actually, because I almost had to check to make sure this wasn't some kind of a joke. But the idea is that reporters are unable to post undercover videos. So essentially what that means is that if somebody were to seek, like, you know, obviously we know what happens to whistleblowers in this country.
Yeah.
So no one's going to want to be a whistleblower these days. So if somebody wants to secretly pass a video to a reporter, let's say, that, you know, blows open some kind of a story, they are now it's illegal to use that video, essentially. You know, so it's, you know, so
wow.
Journalism has been dead for so long now, and this is just the last straw, if you will.
So now we just have complete, you know,
it's
drones
not,
working for journalists. And
well, that's funny you say that. We talked last week about how they literally have robots now writing the news for some of these larger ones, and that's no joke. But it's called Assembly Bill 1671. And it passed the assembly, but it still has to pass the Senate.
I'm surprised it's not AB 1984.
Yeah, right. 1984. That's good. No, but it's something that it's so over the top to me. So it and the craziest part about it is that it specifically talks about and highlights in the wording healthcare providers.
What?
So it's all about the idea of, like, bringing out negative things about healthcare providers. I mean, it's not like the vaccine industries already have enough protection. Now we can't even, if somebody were to record some secret conversation or whatever about them admitting something, we wouldn't even be allowed to play it. It's, I mean, that's just crazy.
Well, California's been in that field for quite some time, especially with phone recordings.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there's mutual agreement on both parties, it's a federal crime to record that.
Yeah, that is true. Now, but let's just take it one step further and say that there was consent given. Right,
mm-hmm.
like with William Thompson,
it wouldn't matter in this case.
Well, it wouldn't at all, because the idea is that, and then the point is, you still don't want your name to get out because you don't want to be caught for a whistleblower. So you secretly send it to a journalist, and at that point, they're not allowed to play it. I mean, how is that seen any other way? I mean, that's absolute, like, a combination of censorship and just violation of rights.
I say people just need to, you know, post it on YouTube. Then, you know, every social media aspect you can go and grab on, post it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's
the
way.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
So what? I'll push it anyway. You know, so what if they pass a law? They can pass all the laws they want, but unless we're afraid of their repercussions, unless we're afraid and think that we have to follow them, the laws are pretty meaningless. I understand they do have some threats they can levy. You know, they can push on us. But the more people start to just decide that it doesn't matter what they legislate, or, and that goes back to what we're talking about with the homestead stuff.
Yeah.
Like, so what if they tell you you're not allowed to do it? I like Adam Kokesh's style. Like, just do it anyway.
Yeah.
Just build it anyway and challenge their jurisdiction. Challenge their right to tell you what to do.
Right.
And make them prove it. And demand proof that they actually have the right to do that and see if they can come up with anything.
Yep.
Now, you know, that's not a path for everybody, but I know that if I was in California, if they mandated vaccines, I'd tell them to go straight to hell. And they're not going to vaccinate me or my kids. If they tell me I can't publish a video just because I took it undercover, we'll see. I bet you I can still publish it. I don't think that they've got enough control to stop me yet. So I think that people need to just stop fearing the government and start doing more of what they know they need to do, with, of course, the admonition that sometimes you're going to have to face them down, and sometimes you're going to maybe go to jail, or, you know, those kinds of things. But if we're afraid of that, then we've already lost, because, I mean, none of the things that we need to do in order to free ourselves are legal. All of it's going to be illegal.
Yeah.
That's the point, I think.
Yeah, and but the scary part of this, what we're moving into, this, you know, Orwellian world that we're creating, is that they have ramped it up, like you were saying, Eric, into this next level now, where we've talked about medical kidnapping and the idea that, you know, so it's harder for those with kids to make these decisions, because then you say, well, screw you, I'm not going to vaccinate my kids, and now we're seeing documented cases where they're coming in with, you know, Child Protective Services and other government agencies taking your kids from you or taking your land from you. And obviously they're ramping up their game big time.
I think too, like we were saying earlier about how many people that are actually awake. I think that's why.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like this last ditch effort to to apply the vice grip on us.
Right. Well, it could be intentional to the regard of, you know, kind of riling up all those people like us out there that are going to start standing out, and then they can take that small faction that still believes what they're saying and claim that it's civil, you know, oh, we're in chaos, we need to, you know, initiate martial law.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's something that people talk about a lot lately, especially going into this new election cycle, where they could claim that, you know, they could, like, I said that years ago, the idea that, you know, that Obama's potentially possibly taking a third term, as much as that considered kind of a joke. It's not that illogical at this point.
Here's a new scenario for you too. You heard about the personal physician that came out and leaked a bunch of stuff on Hillary Clinton, and then he died 24 hours later.
This is crazy.
Oh yeah.
But here's a scenario. So if she is unable and is physically or mentally, which looks like it's both, unfit to serve, that means the DNC can request a suspension of the election so they can hold another primary, at which point the president, Obama, could suspend the election and, you know, enact his an executive order.
Right. Now, there's another spin on that, which I've been seeing a lot as well, is the fact that in that event, because that scenario has never happened before.
No.
So in the event that, let's say, Hillary Clinton gets elected,
mm-hmm.
and then in the process of in between that election and then being inaugurated, if she then falls ill, right, mm-hmm. neither her nor the vice president are able to step in as you know, or the vice president is not able to step up either because they haven't been inaugurated. So they are posing the idea that it could simply be Obama that then steps in and says, well, in this scenario, I'm going to, you know, fill that role.
Yep.
And there's no one else there. I mean, really, so what would they do?
Well, I think there's a really high probability of something like that happening. And I was kind of wondering myself, and not long after I started thinking along those lines, I watched this interview with Dick Gregory, who outright claims there's not going to be a new president. That's not going to happen next year. He says there's not even going to be an election. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like I thought the same thing with Bush. I mean, not that I believed it wasn't going to happen, but I was wondering. I was kind of like, boy, I wonder if he's even going to step down.
Yeah.
But I feel like we are at the end of, you know, we're at the end of the republic phase of this American empire, and this is the beginning of the imperial phase, where they're just basically taking the, you know, it's always been an empire, but they're going to basically unmask it and say, okay, yeah, well, we are now. And they're going to basically reveal the reality of what's going on, mainly because they have to. They can't uphold the charade much longer, because they get in the 9% approval ratings. Like, people know that this is all just a theater. Yep. And so they're going to, I think, start radically changing the game. And of course, when a major world conflict starts, that's another really big catalyst for them to call in emergency measures or them to change the system altogether, and people will accept it because they're so distracted and so distraught by what's going on, bombs falling everywhere and all that. It really just breaks down people's will to go out there and be politically active.
Yeah,
right. Another weird scenario in this whole dynamic, this topic, is that Obama recently signed another executive order that basically signed the idea that if and when, like, the Secretary of Treasury were to, let's say, die or disappear, is what it says in the wording, that then who then would fill that role? So what a random thing to do an executive order for. You know what I mean? Why is that happening? What's going to happen? What do they know is about to happen? You know what I mean? Like, why did that just come out of nowhere like that? And everyone's questioning it, and there's no answers coming.
Well, okay. Yeah, I totally get that, but at the same time, when would be an appropriate time to, you know, enact something?
But why would it be an executive order? There's no reason to rush that. If there's something you think is an important, you know, topic to put through, do it the right way.
Yeah.
Why executive order it right through at the very end? It just seems really fishy.
That
to
is
me.
Crazy.
And why all of a sudden we're talking about one specific station dying and then replacing them for some reason? It's very fishy to me.
Yeah.
But on that fun note, let's roll into some conspiracy freestyle. Let's see what we got here. All right. Okay, vaccinations, flu shots. That kind of rolls in a little bit with what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
What, Dare, are you going to go with your veto? You want to veto that one?
Oh, no. I was just saying, we've covered vaccines so much.
We have. What do you think, Eric? You want to pick another one, or you want to roll with that?
I mean, maybe that's just real quick. We don't have to go into it deep because, I mean, we've seen enough about this, but I think we're probably in agreement already that there's no theory here. I mean, there's a conspiracy.
Okay.
Vaccinations
right.
are created by the eugenicists for the specific purpose of inoculating the chattel with diseases. And
yeah.
I don't know, that's my opinion anyway, but I don't think there's much debate to be had here amongst people who have done the research. Now, if you're going to be talking to somebody who never heard of any of these things, that's a whole other topic. But yeah, I say we can move on.
Well, it's a good point because we did do a show that was the proven conspiracy, or what do we call it?
It was the top six conspiracies that turned out to be true.
Yeah, so I think vaccines was one of those.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's actually pretty shocking today to still see, you know, the hate and the negativity that rolls out of some of these people's mouths when they talk about anti-vaxxers. And it's just, it's, you know, it's so crazy to me that we can't even have a civil discussion anymore about something like this.
And you know what? Now I was just thinking about it. You just said that anti-vaxxers, that is an oxymoron because anti just means in place of. So we're not actually, you know, wanting something in place of vaccinations. We just don't want the fucking things.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but it's
they are hateful though. They'll spit venom on you if they know, especially if you got kids.
It's crazy. It's so obvious.
And they'll be the ones that call CPS on you.
Exactly. They're so indoctrinated with this. They're told that we're the devil. You know, the worst thing out there. And what's crazy is that, you know, we're not, like what we say every time we talk about this is that it's not so polarized. It's not anti-vax versus vax. But there's a whole middle ground in there where we've said, you know, it's the people behind them. Vaccines are good things if they're made by the right people for the right intent.
Right.
But that's not what we're seeing.
There's no reason for metals to be in the vaccines. Not that I know. It doesn't make sense.
I just think that the way that they're being pushed.
Or would you? Did you say there was one that has actual live cancer or not live cancer?
Oh, that's funny you say that. I saw a video.
Yeah, some active viral strands that actually go into vaccines.
I just saw a video recently about a gentleman that was. Basically, it was from a documentary, and they cut this one part out where he's talking about that exact thing that they found. They knew that there was cancer, live cancer virus in this vaccine, and they used it anyway and eventually changed it, but they were very aware of it. And so basically gave people cancer. It's crazy. And he openly talks about it, and they have a good laugh about it. It's like, it's ridiculous to see. I'll make sure and put that in the show notes. It's pretty disgusting to see.
I don't know. Is it? Do they do that for these vaccines just as a filler or something? I mean,
I'm sure that they're like, it's the same way they use like GMOs. They use like the Ebola virus or some of these viruses to. It's, I don't understand the science, to be quite honest about it, but it seems kind of crazy.
Kind of experimental, you know? They were kind of their lab rats.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
The one that got me was Bill Gates' comment that the vaccines could be used to help reduce the world population. It's like, how can we interpret that as anything else? Other than this is a method to exterminate people.
Exactly.
Yo, son, we could spend 4 hours talking about Bill Gates, so we're going to have to get you back on because that guy, he is in my devil book.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of devil book, the one I pulled next is Operation Paperclip.
Oh.
That's a good one, actually. We haven't talked about that. That's
the Nazi one, right?
Yeah, that's the idea that, and it's not a good idea. This is verified. This is factual events.
Yeah, that's not a theory anymore.
Yeah, we took all the most prominent Nazi scientists after World War II and rolled them into basically what created NASA.
It was like 1,500 of them, wasn't it?
I'm not sure about the amount of them, but it was a lot of them, and the fact that
it was 1,000 for sure.
Yeah,
they you know, they were like, hey, these guys are doing some good work. We got to get them over in the Area 51.
Oh yeah, Werner von Braun was an actual SS officer.
Yep. Now, when I think about the terrible things we've read about that happened, like the experiments that were happening on human patients, and then the fact that we just rolled them right into NASA and what we create, you know, it's just. That's just crazy to think about. Like, I get some of them probably weren't bad people. Like, the same way you can say about just any Nazi officer, some of them were just simply doing their job.
And
go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to do this before I forgot the train of thought, but experimentation on humans back then, that those scientists are the ones that found out that fluoride.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Fluoridated water or whatever, fluoridated pills will subdue a population.
Yeah, a form of mild mind control, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's funny, now, those kind of topics are so extreme for some people. You know, even just saying that out loud, it's like people, you know, this is science, people. This is things that you can look up that have been verified scientifically. You know, these effects they have, and you'll let any dentist you ask will tell you that. Well, anyone that hasn't been completely indoctrinated will tell you that fluoride really doesn't do much for your teeth besides hurt them.
You can tell too, like when you talk to a dentist and they appear to be listening to you and be like, well, let me think about it. Whereas then you have the other dentist like, shut the fuck up and get out of my office.
Yeah, right. Just don't want to hear it at all.
Don't want to hear it.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts. But you know, we've talked about a lot more kind of supernatural aspects of this too, like the, you know, the things that they were doing in, before they came over, about like, you know, like trying to do blood infusions to other people and reconnecting different, it's really odd science that was just off, like really off the beaten path. And there's the whole classic idea about what they were doing with, you know, trying to find like these supernatural relics and different things.
Yeah.
Not necessarily those scientists per se, but just the idea that what they were doing was so kind of, I don't know, the way we'd look at it now would be wrong. Yeah. You know what I mean? And the fact that is what created the base for NASA is kind of crazy in itself. I've actually been seeing a lot of interesting conspiracy topics about the moon landings again recently.
Oh, really?
I mean, mixed up. Yeah, just people coming out saying that they were fakes and that that's verifying the whole Stanley Kubrick videos, even though I think those were verified as fakes.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
But interesting tie-in that they were the ones that created this science, and now, you know, mm-hmm. and how that led into a lot of different conspiracy theories. It's interesting.
You know about the Glock, the Nazi bell?
No, what's that?
Oh, you should look that up. That'll be a whole nother talk, too. But basically, it was... that was the technology that the Manhattan Project was based off, or Philadelphia experiment was based off of. Time travel, space travel.
Mandela effect.
You know what? It's funny you say that, because I just came across an article where they say, you know, the Mandela effect actually started when they initiated the Nazi bell, the Glock.
Ooh, weird.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Are you familiar with the Mandela effect, Eric?
Yeah, I am, and actually, you know, we all y'all talked about it on the last episode, didn't you?
Yeah, it's interesting.
I have had experiences that kind of deal that are kind of like that. Like, wait a minute, I know that, I remember that differently. But when the Star Wars, what I remember specifically, it was, "No, I am your father." That is the original line.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, he's already in conversation with him. He's not going to be. I think what it is though, is other people have somehow misquoted that line and. In our minds to hear the Luke thing, but like, you know, people that put on like a, you know, something that makes their voice sound different than the Luke. But whatever the case, the Berenstain Bears, I was surprised just recently, before I even heard of this theory, my daughters are reading that book and I'm looking at it thinking, wait, did they spell the name on it? I remember it.
Yeah, Stain, I mean, come on, I totally remember Stein.
Yeah.
It's
such an interesting concept, you know, though.
It's an interesting concept. I haven't really looked too deeply into it, but we brought up Project Paperclip. What came to my mind was the idea that when we begin with certain assumptions, some things are really big mysteries. It's like we can't figure out why all of these things are happening if we assume this, this, and this. And then if we assume something else, all of a sudden it all makes perfect sense and it's very logical and there's no question. And so for me, if you assume that the Allies and the Nazis were actually fighting a war that are that they're real enemies and stuff, it's mind-boggling to think that we would take their most evil scientists, you know, mad scientists, and bring them over here and put them to work. But, you know, it's kind of like the kids that really, that they watch their favorite world wrestling, you know, stars on TV, and they see them at a conference, and they're all having lunch together, and they're all buddies. I'm like, wait a minute, I thought you guys were mortal enemies. And it's like, well, once you understand that these factions are not really at war,
right.
I mean, they are. They're actually bombs dropping and people dying, but at the top, they're all run by the same people. And
it's still a broad way to play.
They created the system, the CIA, and all the systems in the United States. It's all kind of funded from the same source. And so it comes as a little surprise to me. In fact, they would be idiots if they didn't take those Nazi scientists, because as evil as some of what the stuff they were doing was, they were, scientifically speaking, they were at least cutting edge. Yeah. You know, they were doing work that was defining the modern era.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. And there is definitely a lot of conspiracies surrounding the idea of World War II in general. You know, whether the government funding the Third Reich or things like that. You know, that it's like you said, there's a bigger picture. There wasn't just two countries at war. It was a much larger thing going on behind the scenes. I mean, you know, we've said that in the past, where, you know, some of these most intelligent people will say that, you know, almost 90% of war in general is considered a psyop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's such a crazy thing.
Agree.
Just think
it's
about
the
modern
wars.
Yeah, it's just nuts to think about, like, how much, historically speaking, that's crazy. And all these people like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds funding wars from both sides, it does make sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, was it...
One other thing I want to ask you guys, if you ever saw the article about... I saw an article that purported that Hitler was brought over to Argentina and just died there in, like, the late 90s.
I did see that.
There's photographs.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
His daughter, he was a priest or something?
What's that?
He actually lived on to become a priest out in Argentina for a while with his daughter.
Yeah, he was there until his old age, and I didn't do deep research on it. I didn't really verify it empirically, but just my gut reaction to that was, well, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, he did good work with him. He was kind of like one of the stars of their whole program to test out fascism in Europe in the middle of the last century. And I feel like they would, of course, reward him. And the thought that he would kill himself in a bunker underground seems just kind of skeptical to me. It's like, what?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I didn't really vet it real carefully, but just by my gut level, I have a feeling that that's probably true, that he probably did go hide out for the rest of his life on some villa.
Right. It does make sense. I mean, you know, and then you just take into account everything we've been talking about. It just falls right in line. And like you said, that does sound ridiculous that someone like him, as proud as he was to kill himself in that fashion, which it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah,
but yeah, I did read that article. It's very interesting. There's even a picture, right, of like the one without it, like one without the mustache.
It was compelling. I mean, the pictures, they didn't look A, like Photoshop fakes, and B, you know, I could see resemblances, and I could see, you know, I don't know, it felt real to me. And that's kind of, I have a kind of a smell test when anything comes by. My gut reaction, I trust it a lot, and sometimes I'll come back and say, oh, well, I was wrong. But
right.
A lot of times, it's like, man, there's, and really, I don't put anything past them. Like, we might have discussed briefly, or somewhere I was talking to someone briefly about the whole flat earth thing, and I looked at it with open eyes just because I looked at it. I don't put anything past them, and, you know, it didn't pass my smell test. I don't go for any of that stuff. But I didn't write it off right away because nothing is too big of a crazy conspiracy to be beyond these people.
Right.
They will try anything and everything, and it's like we don't know what they've done that we haven't found out about yet.
Right. Yeah, we came to the same conclusion on our Flat Earth show that's the whole idea. It was an exercise in keeping an open mind, you know, and that's what we always say, right? You have to take everything as... With a healthy level of skepticism, but at the same time leaving open the possibility that it could be true. You know, it's
there was
on both
one
sides.
Thing that cemented it for me that we are sitting on a globe, and that was the fact that when you could see the Earth's shadow on the moon, it was curved. There's no other explanation for that.
Well, I mean, you could take it an extreme route, and some people actually believe that...
Oh, yeah, the moon is fake, and
exactly,
it's a projection.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what they would say. I don't believe that, but that, you know, that would be the logic behind it. They think it's in a dome or whatever, you know?
If it was fake, it would not be able to produce... Did you know that the moon actually produces light that's colder in its light than it is in the shade?
What do you mean?
That's a trip. The light that comes from the moon is colder... than it would be in the shade of its moon's shadow.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah, there's a ton of experience on
that.
Yeah, it's a trip. So, but I mean, just the light itself, you know, coming from the moon, that proves
there's all sorts of interesting moon conspiracy theories.
Oh, yeah.
Not beyond even that. Beyond, like, I've heard one that the moon is hollow, that it's actually an artificial spacecraft.
Yeah.
There's bases on the dark side of it. All these things, and again, I haven't looked into any of this stuff real deeply, but. There are ancient writings that talk about a time before the moon when there was no moon on the planet. Some people talk about it as a computer that regulates the biological and the reproductive capacities of the mammals, and that's true. I mean,
Moons,
cycles are connected to the moon, and it's essentially, you know, a controlling device.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not it's natural or not, I can't really say. But I don't put it past it. I don't think that it's beyond the realm of possibility for some other entity to have brought that thing here and been using it to maintain control over this planet.
Well, it would have to be a form of control because, like the ancients said, there was a time before the moon. So obviously they were doing fine, you know?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I wonder what kind of control effect it actually is responsible for and what its goal.
Well, the idea that we were, you know, obviously like he was saying, we know that it regulates... You know, like the tides and the flow of things. It's a more of a magnetic, or, you know, what would you call it? Just a gravitational pull. You know, and so that even that has been demonstrated to have direct effects with people's moods and the way they feel and think and act.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, think about, just take that, extrapolate that out further. You know, that it's controlling the way that we feel, the way that we see things. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah, well, that's a good place to stop there as we dive further into these conspiracies, because we'll get lost in that forever.
Right.
But, right.
Eric, why don't you give the audience out there a way to get in touch with you as far as your website and things like that before we end today?
Sure. My website is firmagora.com, and you can find me on Facebook, Eric McCool, or email me, ericmccool@gmail.com. And, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Like Finn McCool?
Oh yeah, Graham was that's one of my forebears, old Finn McCool, the legendary.
We gotta talk off air sometime there, brother.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, the guy I was talking to today, I'm here in Bend, Oregon, visiting a guy who is very into his indigenous Irish heritage, and he's learning Gaelic, and he's gonna go study in Ireland for a year, and he knows more about my namesake and my history there than I do, and it's just really impressive. But it's important to learn stuff too. I'm learning from him. It's like it really helps us to break free of the sort of colonial empire mentality,
yeah,
to reconnect with our indigenous roots.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Anhiggin to Gwaelin.
What's that?
No.
No Gaelic.
No Gaelic, huh?
Are you speaking Gaelic?
Yep. Anhiggin to Gwaelin.
I don't know it, so I'm behind the curve on that one.
Okay. Yeah. I'll have to give you some lessons then.
Well, it's great to have you on there, Eric, and you're welcome back anytime, man. I think that was a great discussion there.
Awesome. Thanks for calling me up, and glad to be on. It's great. Y'all have a great show going, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, you know, the great thing to take from this, guys, is you know, take your first step in this journey and really begin to become self-sufficient.
Yeah,
you know, begin to break away from this system that is beginning to be oppressive. I mean, we're seeing it with everything from food to medicine to our daily lives.
Yep.
So take that first step and really begin to learn how to grow your own food and research these things for yourselves, guys. Always follow the change. Be the change.
Clouds when they spray out shit. You can see it because it happens every day now, kid. You can read the patents and see what they say about this. They make town sick. It ain't safe to stay around this. If they didn't mean to leave a trail that scatters in the sky, why am I seeing geometric patterns from the lines? You're blind to the facts and afraid of the truth. Your mind's trapped by the lies that they say in the news. Planes spew poison out, starting barely.